Hey, it's Brian. We are in some crazy times right now. No one predicted a sports shutdown or the education system being closed for business. But here we are. I have three kids at home right now who should be in middle and elementary school. But you know what we're doing? We're continuing to keep them on a learning schedule, and you should do that too. Now is the chance to update your resume, work on your network, make sure you are ready for video interviews, and more. And one way you can do that is through our Work in Sports Academy courses. We are 100% online, which is the appropriate social distance. And you'll learn incredible strategies, tactics, and techniques that will get you hired in sports once the world gets back to normal. Check out workinsports.com/academy for more details. Trust me, you'll enjoy what we've created and you'll learn a lot too. All right, let's start the countdown.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0, ignition, liftoff.
Hey everybody, I'm Brian Clapp, VP of content for workinsports.com, and this is the Work in Sports Podcast. Right now, I'm about to lead into this incredible podcast interview with Gordon Barfield, Director of Business Strategy for AMB Sports and Entertainment. That is the ownership group for the Atlanta Falcons and Atlanta United FC. Gordon's incredible. He's a West Point grad, got his MBA at Wharton, and has been crushing it with AMB. We're going to talk about how the Falcons look to the future of their businesses, the strategy behind cashless transactions inside the stadium, and how they built their fan base and community. All extremely valuable conversations. We will not be talking about coronavirus because when I recorded this interview 3 weeks ago, it hadn't really happened yet. So take this as a break from all the chaos. Learn more about sports business. Find your focus. See if this is a side of the industry that interests you. Because we will get back to normal, hopefully sooner rather than later, and you want to be prepared. So learn a little something from today's guest, Gordon Barfield, Director of Business Strategy for AMB Sports and Entertainment. Hey, Gordon, how's it going today?
Going great. How are you?
I'm doing really well. I'm really excited to talk to you about everything happening at AMB Sports and Entertainment and your background in the military and some of the things that have really launched you in your career. So let's jump into this. Before we get into your world of business strategy and all the steps you took to get where you are now, I want to go back to that military background a little bit and the synergy you find between the military and sports, because I find that we have a lot of people in our audience who are from a military background and veterans that are then looking to transition into this world, and that seems to be very aligned with what your background. You're a West Point grad and active duty in the Army until 2014. Why do you think that is? Why is there such a parallel between active military or retired veterans who are looking to transition and seeing the sports world as a fit?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, I spent 5 years in the Army, entirely in the infantry. You know, and I transitioned out probably some of the same reasons that a lot of other veterans have. And I knew there would be some things that I would, you know, have a tough time finding outside of the military. And I think, you know, the top ones that come to mind, I knew I'd miss the camaraderie, the shared sacrifice, the fighting for something bigger than yourself. And I think those are things that, you know, many veterans do come to miss, especially after they get out and have been out for a little while. You know, I think many vets are drawn to sports and sports business due to some of those close similarities. You know, it's the people, the culture, that shared purpose of achieving a common goal that you find in both the military and in sports.
Would you consider yourself a competitive person? Is that part of it as well?
Absolutely. You know, I think it's something that I really was drawn to just in the business world to start with, but then even more so in sports. You take a world where winning on the field drives success, but also winning in business, and kind of put those two together, and it was just a perfect fit between business and sports. So absolutely, I think everybody I work with probably shares that same competitive desire and competitive mentality.
Yeah, I always wonder if that's an essential component, because I've been in the industry for 20 years now and my background's in the sports media, and I just felt like it was a very competitive world and I thrived in that world. I love that. And I find most of the people I talk to have that kind of a competitive spirit. And I just wondered from your perspective, is that something you've identified as being essential for success in the sports industry?
Absolutely. And it goes all across the sports business landscape. So, you know, even just our creative people who are doing graphic design, like in everything they're doing, they want to be the best at it. They want to have the best marketing campaigns. We want to be the most innovative team, most innovative stadium. So this competitive nature is seen across everything that we do. And it really permeates through all lines of, you know, all roles and all types of work in the company.
Yeah, I love that personally. I love that drive to always be the best. And that is something that's really essential in our industry. So I found this interesting in your background. When you were at West Point, you were in mechanical engineering, which doesn't necessarily translate to the sports world quite as well. And then after the Army, you got your MBA from Wharton. So why this step? When did you hit that moment where you're like, okay, maybe it's not the mechanical engineering thing. Maybe I need to really enhance my business knowledge. This is the right. When did you hit that moment where that was a realization you wanted to pursue?
Right. So got my undergrad degree in mechanical engineering and really had no desire to ever be an engineer, which sounds kind of silly. When I joined and went into the Army after West Point, I went to the infantry and used pretty much none of my engineering abilities or skill set. Right. So, you know, I did it because I enjoyed it. I liked the problem-solving approach. I liked the critical thinking. I'd say those traits were things that I've taken with me. When I decided to leave the Army, I knew I wanted to get into the business world, and I wanted to set myself up best for success in the business world. And so, to me, getting an MBA at a top school felt like a natural choice. And then I was blessed to be accepted at Wharton and then have the opportunity to work after that at McKinsey & Company. And really, throughout my time at both Wharton and McKinsey, I was able to develop the skills and some of the capabilities that I think prepared me very well for the transition to my current job here.
You said something really interesting in there that I latched on to. You talked about problem-solving traits. And that's something I think we probably don't talk about enough, is just the ability to see a problem and solve a problem. And as that relates to business or industry or anything that you're involved in, and having a vision for solutions, is that something that is just a intrinsic thing within you, or is that something that kind of developed over time?
I think it's something you have to develop. I think a lot of people want to be good problem solvers, but they don't necessarily have the background or the skills or really the training to get to a point where they're truly effective. And I think it's something you see at all levels across all companies, both big and small, is, you know, there's always a need to do better and do a better job of solving problems quickly, efficiently, and effectively. And so it's something that I focused a lot on, and I feel like it's been a good skill set to have, especially in the sports world.
Yeah, it's true. I remember when I had a staff of 35, and when people would come in and to my office with a problem, instead of just coming up with a solution for them, I'd always say back to them, all right, give me two ideas. You know, what do you think we should be doing? How do you think we should be solving this problem? And at first, it was like, you got all this pushback. People were like, well, I don't know. That's your job. You know what I mean? Like, they wanted me to solve it for them. But as soon as you started to get into that mentality and pushing people and saying, like, give me two ideas, give me your thoughts. And then, you know, they'd present their two, and then maybe I'd say, all right, that's not bad. What about this, though? And you get them thinking that way and challenging themselves that way. And next thing you know, they become problem solvers. So it does seem to me like that's something that can be trained or at least expected of staff. Do you agree?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I think there's some things you can do. Your example you gave is you gave a little bit of structure. You said, all right, let's come up with give me some ideas. Let's structure. Let's think about what are the possible outcomes, what are the possible scenarios we can go down. And then, you know, you can enable and empower those people to solve problems themselves instead of relying on one person to do all of the, you know, all of the problem solving and idea creation and, you know, execution and all of that.
So, all right, at this point in your career, you got your Wharton MBA, you're at McKinsey, which these are great places to learn and educate yourself. Were you still kind of figured out who you wanted to be when you grew up? Because it's still a pretty big jump into the sports world. Were you still searching for your long-term fit, or did you kind of have this eye for eventually I want to get to the sports world?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, I think I was still looking for that long-term fit when I was at McKinsey, and just given the nature of consulting, you're bouncing between different companies, and those are all inherently short-term opportunities. But I did know the types of things I was interested in, and I knew the types of work I didn't want to do, and I knew the types of companies I would like to work at. And it just so happened that, you know, A&B Sports and Entertainment and the sports world, actually most of those companies, you know, fit into like what I wanted to do in my career. So it just seemed like a natural fit, and the timing was right.
Yeah. So you joined AMB Sports and Entertainment just about 2 years ago. It's a parent company for the Falcons, Atlanta United, Mercedes-Benz Stadium, and some other Arthur Blank, of other Arthur Blank's ventures. That was a tough one. You joined them as the director of business strategy, and this was your first true gig in sports. Were there any eye-opening moments when you first got started with AMB? Like, did you look at it and say, "Whoa, this is completely different than anything I've done before," or you know, anything that kind of stands out from that those first couple months or years?
Yeah, there's a few things that stood out. I think one is the core values that the entire organization truly lives. You know, it's something that Mr. Blank and our top leadership, they put a pretty passionate focus on. And it was something that was just refreshing to experience, especially coming from McKinsey, working with large corporations. Another thing that I think was eye-opening was the organization's commitment to invest in not just in things that make money, but also invest in the fans, invest in the community, and then really invest in the employees. And I think we had the advantage here that our company is has a pretty unique blend of being highly profitable, but also pretty small. It's in a kind of pseudo startup phase with the Atlanta United Mercedes-Benz Stadium only being a few years old. And there's still a pretty big focus on innovation and growth. So you get that combination of things, and it's just something that's you don't get a lot of other places, and it was just eye-opening to see all of that come to fruition and come to light there over the last few years.
So what would you say is the main thrust of your role with the organization? What does it mean to be the director of business strategy? Because that seems like a pretty broad title, and it can cover a lot of areas. How would you define it?
Absolutely. So it's definitely a pretty nebulous title. Yes. I get that question all the time. So I'd say, for me and my team, we have a handful of responsibilities. I get pulled in a lot of different ways, but I have a few primary functions. I lead and manage strategy development, strategic planning. I manage key strategic projects, act as a thought partner with most different departments in the business. And I spend significant time working on ways to further improve our business. So that includes things like growth strategy, initiatives towards improving fan experience, cost reduction programs, organizational health building, et cetera.
So it sounds like, in a way, you're always looking towards the future, like what's needed next, what's happening next. Is that where you have to kind of keep your creative lens on, is where can we be going?
Absolutely. I try to. I think that's something that, people have a tendency to think short term, here and now. But it's good to have at least part of your business thinking a little bit further out. And where do we want to be when we grow up as a business? Where should we be in 3 to 5 years? We don't know what's going to happen in the industry. We don't know what's going to happen here in our city or our economy or whatever it may be. So just having some thought, looking a little further out to prepare for those, those uncertain outcomes, uncertain scenarios.
So I interviewed the talent acquisition lead for a Major League Baseball team, and I asked her about the role that is in highest demand for her. Like, what are they really trying to develop and grow within their team? And she said, without a doubt, without batting an eye, business strategy and analysis. And since you're on this side of the industry, tell us, like, what traits and skills make someone successful in this world of business analysis and strategy? And even broader, why do you think sports teams are adapting this vision more?
Yeah, to start with that last question there, I think people are realizing that the industry has shifted a bit in the last several years. Now big competition for sporting events is the TV, and people sitting at home or watching on their iPad or streaming or having all these different angles they can look at it. It's more comfortable in a lot of ways than actually going to a stadium. So, it's harder to sell tickets now. It's harder to make get people into your venue. And so it's shifting. And so it's how do you prepare for that? And I look at the baseball world. They face the challenge even more visibly, right, with 81 home games. Just getting people in, and then how do you keep fans engaged and have those season ticket holders really see value in what they purchased. And then getting back then to some of the traits and skills, and why I think this type of role is in higher demand. I'd say first is the ability to communicate, right? So you have to be able to provide clarity, structure, give that appropriate level of data driven, analytics and insight. I think next probably, I'd say, is critical thinking, right? So thinking through all those possible scenarios, challenging assumptions, and approaching all those problems in a structured way. Next maybe is the ability to gain alignment from people across the business and get them to feel a sense of ownership. Right. So a lot of things that you do, there's, you know, I'm not the head of ticket sales or I'm not the head of finance, but it's the ability to pull them together and get everybody to align on things, really fight towards and work towards those common objectives. I'd say lastly, it's being a well-rounded leader. And that includes both leading a team, but also leading across the organization. And oftentimes when you don't have any position of authority, you're serving internal clients and you're pulling teams together and pulling work together without any real authority, but how do you lead in that sense? So that's it. Maybe those four things would be some of the top ones that come to mind of why people are looking at, you know, that business strategy and analytics type of role.
That's great. That's a really some incredible insight there. One thing I noticed is, you know, I was at the, you mentioned a lot about fans and coming to the game and buying tickets and all the, that part of it is, so I was at the National Sports Forum recently, and one of the, it seemed like the overarching theme of the entire conference was the fan experience. And it seemed like, and I noticed this too, I came to Mercedes-Benz Stadium last year, and, you know, we had a corporate tour kind of thing. And what I was amazed at is that the change in philosophy of stadiums and arenas and expectations. So it's not just we expect somebody to buy a ticket and sit in their seat the entire time. We're making an entire environment for the fan to engage in and have a good time at the event. There's all kinds of different little micro areas that they can go and hang out and do different things. It's an entire experience. Is that what you're seeing too as a trend in the industry, is saying, hey, it's not just about sitting in your seat and watching the game. We want to make an entire fan experience?
That's right. I think it's definitely becoming a trend towards maximizing that fan experience. That's something that Arthur Blank did when he, you know, decided to go with a fan-friendly food and beverage pricing, right? So you see in the stadium, $1.50 hot dogs, $2 sodas. Just finding those pain points for fans when they come. They have to, you're already having to buy a ticket, then you have to pay for parking. You get here and then you're buying, you know, $8 hot dogs, and you know, people don't want to do that, and that's what they... It can ruin experience. It's hard to bring a family of four to a game and, you know, not get, end up spending hundreds of dollars. So that was one of the things that, you know, we did here at our stadium, is just make the focus on our fans, getting into the stadium, moving around the stadium, being able to find and purchase without waiting, having minimal restroom wait times, all the things that kind of add up to, you know, making a worse experience. And then when you actually are watching the game, having the technology there and having the, you know, the production and that entertainment, just make it a full experience so that it's not just sitting there freezing while watching your team, who, in all honesty, you know, we can't control how good the team is. You can't control wins and losses, but we can control the experience around the venue, and really for that season ticket member especially, you know, what's their experience throughout the year, not just on game day.
Yeah, that's been one of the biggest aha moments for me as I conduct a lot of these interviews, is that when I talk to people who are in sales, they always say, we can't sell winning and losing, but we can sell the experience. And that's an important thing. I love that more and more teams seem to be getting smarter about that and saying, like, hey, this is where we need to build things. On the point of your concessions and the pricing model, I think that's obviously been huge for you guys. You also led the transition at Mercedes-Benz Stadium to a cashless transaction model, which is really groundbreaking. Again, mm-hmm. You're leaders in this. Why was this important for the long-term goals of the operation?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, stadiums, especially our stadium, is unique in a lot of ways, right? So we have just the sheer number of food and beverage transactions that we handle in a really short window of time. So, you know, 4 hours, we're doing upwards of 90,000 food and beverage transactions in the stadium.
Wow.
And, you know, that causes a lot of things to go well, but also, you know, it has a lot of challenges that go along with it. And the biggest one was our reliance on cash, right? So over half of our transactions were with cash 2 years ago. And so when you have that much cash, you have to spend several hundred thousand dollars a year just managing the cash with security to, you know, move cash around, cash counting operation. You're, you know, over $1 million in cash and float in your stadium. The second piece is transactions just take longer when you have cash. And we're in a business of getting people through lines as quick as possible, both so they have a better experience, but so they can get back and watch the game. And really, it's that 15 minutes before the game and then the 15 minutes at halftime. We just can't afford to be slow. And lastly, you know, I mentioned our fan-friendly pricing. We ended up going with pricing in whole dollar increments just so we could avoid giving out coins and change, right? So it was either $2 or $3 or $4. Unfortunately, that prevented us from ever adjusting prices by anything other than a dollar.
Right.
So going cashless actually allowed us to fix that. So now we have like $1.50 hot dog instead. And going cashless helps actually fix all of those problems. While at the same time, we spent a lot of time thinking through and considering how do we not exclude those people who truly only have cash. And so we've also been able to do that very successfully.
I love that you're looking at it from, it's almost like you conduct a focus group and like all of these fans come in and say, hey, I hate waiting in line for the bathroom. I hate waiting in line for food. And I want to have a really fun experience when I get there. And you're like, okay, great. There's our business plan. Like, these are the things we need to fix. Here are our problems. You know, it's like, it's great that you're really attacking the issues that matter most to the fans.
Absolutely. And that's one of our core values is listen and respond. And we spend a lot of time surveying and talking to our fans, finding out what they want. And really reading past what they're saying sometimes and getting to the root cause of what are their true concerns and what really irks them when they come to the game. And then taking that and then addressing those problems and fixing them.
Yeah. So, okay, I've worked with people throughout my career who are really great on ideas, but not very strong in execution. And then I've worked with others who are the opposite. No ideas, great at executing. And we all know, like, the greatest idea gets us nowhere unless you can execute upon it. So how important is it in your eyes and in your role to be able to kind of balance both sides, to be able to be creative and come up with ideas or come up with solutions to problems, but also be able to gather people together and execute on a mission and be able to project manage or, just to be able to actually get things done?
Right. So I think they're both vitally important. You need to be able to do both, right? I think at different levels of any organization, the focus between the two, it fluctuates. The real challenge to me is finding the balance and when it's appropriate to do one more than the other. You have to find the balance in developing ideas, delegating responsibility, managing those processes, providing oversight, and then also just doing things yourself sometimes. Now, you can't do all the ideating, planning, the execution for everything. So it's crucial to develop that a level of trust with your team and then empower them to do their jobs. I think it's once you strike the right balance and you know the balance of, what should I be doing versus what should others be doing, it just makes it a lot simpler and a lot easier.
So in your background in both the military and highly successful organizations like AMB and McKinsey, you've been exposed to a lot of different types of leaders. So in your view, what makes a good leader?
That's a tough one.
Yeah,
so there's
a lot
of things I think that make a good leader. Some of the top ones that come to mind for me, good leader must be competent at their job. Others need to trust that they can do their job and they can do it well, which sounds pretty simple, but it's not. Right. Next, I would say is you have to be able to inspire and empower others to excel. It's not just telling somebody to do something, but it's inspiring them to want to do things themselves. And to want to be great and to want to excel. I'd say maybe the last one is showing respect at all times, right? So you're respecting yourself, you're respecting your team, you're respecting your customers, your environment, the community. I think it's just showing respect at all times. And if you keep that in mind, like by being respectful, like I tell my kids, like, are you showing respect right now? And if you are, then you're probably doing the right thing. So keeping that respect, top thing that you're doing is being respectful, and that's, yeah, third one there.
Yeah, those are great. I mean, that's seriously like that you've just drawn up a perfect model of what a leader looks like. And I wonder, does leadership change based on environment? So like being from the military, did you have to change your style at all? Like I would imagine there's a little bit different approach when you're leading people in the military. There's a different, end result, cause, effect, pressure versus in the executive suite. Or are there some parallels?
Absolutely, right? So in high intensity situation and when you're in the infantry, you can lead in a lot different way and you should be leading in a lot different way than when you're in a boardroom with people from all different backgrounds, right? So I've always tried to adapt my leadership style based on who I'm leading and the environment I'm in. Obviously, in the corporate world, you don't have any legal authority like you would in the military, although I'd say you shouldn't be relying on that when you're in the military. And I do think it's even more important in the business world to develop that emotional intelligence, something that we often don't think about when you're in the military. you encounter people from a far wider range of backgrounds, skill sets, motivations, and needs. And you have to be able to meet them where they are. You can't always expect them to do things your way. So it's being able to adapt, not just on the company you're in, but also the individual person that you are leading as people respond to different things.
Yeah, for sure. That was one of the biggest moments for me when I got into management, was realizing that everybody has different motivations and touch points and needs and wants, and really understanding each individual and what they needed to be successful. And it's different. It's every person you kind of go about it a different way with. And once you realize that and can realize those buttons that are the right ones to push, it can make all the difference. Let's finish up with this. You're someone with a military background, we've talked about, and I have spoken with a lot of people in this realm, and they say, hey, I don't have the time or the ability to do the traditional, internship, or go about the quote unquote normal process of transitioning to a career in sports or otherwise. So you live this. You were an infantryman, so you weren't doing internships for a minor league baseball team, right? So what advice would you give someone who has served their country and is now trying to transition to a sports career?
Yeah, so I would say there's probably no normal process of going out of from the military into sports. I think people take all different routes. We have over a dozen veterans working here from all different backgrounds. And so I'd say my advice would be to just take the time to figure out what type of work you want to do in the sports world. I think it's very important to develop a skill set that allows for you to transition at some point into sports. Maybe it's not directly from the military. It's sometime a little bit later. But understand what skills you need to develop that will translate, whether that's accounting or web app development or analytics or videography or sports medicine. There's a wide range of roles in the sports world. It's just knowing what skills do you need to develop those skills, and then be patient, right? It's a smaller industry, especially when you're looking at the number of teams out there, and ideal job openings are less common than maybe in other industries. So position yourself in the best way possible for when the opportunity arises. I'd say lastly, just spend time talking to people in the industry, ask questions, learn about the different roles, and put yourself out there. I'd say it's probably the big advice that I would give to anybody looking to transition out into the sports world.
I always make the mistake of saying, all right, we'll finish up with this. And then I always have a follow-up right afterwards. So I apologize. I do have a follow-up. So you mentioned there are 12, I think you said 12, other veterans working at AMB. Are there certain organizations that have a culture of hiring veterans or being more veteran-friendly? And is that something that's kind of known and talked about? Because it does seem like some organizations really value the maturity, the leadership, the skills that come along with being in the military. Is that something that's ever talked about out there?
I know in our business, we definitely have a strong culture from the top down. Our CEO is a veteran. It kind of comes down from the top and really from Mr. Blank about supporting veterans and the military community. I'd say that it holds true probably across many of the other sports clubs. I can't speak for their cultures necessarily, but I think the skills that you learn in the military, it's that discipline, it's that leadership ability. I think those are definitely highly sought after traits. I think it's just finding the ability to couple those traits you learn in the military with a technical skill or some sort of skill that will put you that extra level above your competition to find one of these roles and to really get into this space.
Gordon, this is fantastic. Thank you so much for coming on the show. There's so much great insight you've given us into the world of business strategy, but also just coming from your military background and giving advice to those others who are in the military now, who may be going off active duty soon and are looking to transition. So all of this advice is so important to our audience. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Thanks to Gordon for coming on the show. So much great insight into the sports business world and transitioning from the military to the private sector. I know many of our veterans in the audience will appreciate all he shared. Thanks for listening, everyone. Stay safe out there. Stay quarantined and listen to more podcasts.